So my first question for you, Roland, is what have you been up to lately, and what is going on in the world of Roland Grappa?
Not so many news, to be honest. Keep working as a mixing guy, producer guy. Had a couple of bands last year, and still busy today. So I have now a band from, I don't know, this mixed kind of European, South American mixture. I think the band called Safe. So it's like kind of very interesting style. I never mixed something like that. It's like Opeth, you know, a lot of diverse styles melted together, really dynamic. That's why it's more difficult, because, you know, I like normally, you know, metal to mix. And so I had a couple of Spanish bands again. One is Avalanche, which I think the album comes out soon, and the video comes, I think, in a couple of days, I hope. Yeah, last year was quite busy. I did Mürgrand. I'm not sure if I pronounce it right. It's a Brazilian guy who came to my studio, and he connected the studio trip here in Slovakia with Wacken. So he went after my recording to Wacken, and I mixed it. It was quite interesting. So, and Kevin, our drummer from Masterplan, played drums on it. I played some guest solo, I guess, and mixed it and recorded it here. Mm-hmm. And many, many more. And now we're planning slowly to write songs for Masterplan and recording it this year, and hopefully getting it out this year.
You know, I've seen a lot of albums that have had your name in there for the credits as far as mixing. And, you know, what are some of the bands out there that were just highlights for you to work with, you know, that you really loved working with over the last year?
I think it depends, you know. Some of the bands are very unknown, very young, which makes a lot of fun if they believe in my kind of judging and experience. Some bands are very difficult to work with. Still like the band Silent Stream of Godless Elegy from Czech Republic. They have this kind of folkloric metal style, and they get really good reviews. Maybe I talked already last time about them, but I see still they get reviews every day, mm-hmm. and Europe and magazines and everything. So I like to work with them. They're quite unique. And still liked the band Lords of Black from Spain, my friend Tony. Now they're searching for a new singer. This is not so nice. You know, working on three albums with them already, and they were really on the way up. And everybody knows he's the singer of Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And now they're searching for a new one, and I hope in the summer they finish already the new album with a new singer. So I really love to work for Lords of Black. I have the feeling to work with Tony is the easiest way, and I have a lot of passion and heart and soul in it. So
right.
I really like the sound they have.
Now, it's interesting because some bands work with certain producers and sound guys, because that producer, whoever has that connection with them, that really helps make up that band's sound. And you've mixed these Lords of Black albums now. Do you feel that you have that connection with them that, say, other bands have connections with certain producers that they use quite a bit?
Yes, I think it depends. Or not depends. I mean, I think the logical way is they were both, Singer and Tony, they were big Masterplan fans. And I think that's a kind of honor for me to work with them and to make them not sounding like Masterplan, but in a way that the inspiration is that it could be my project, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't produce it. I just mixed always the album. So I was never really 100% involved in the songwriting process. So I always tell them, please invite me if you want some help or something, like arranging the songs or maybe writing something together, something more deeper into vocal melodies or something. I would love to do it. But mm-hmm. basically, you know, he writing, producing, or co-produced, but I'm basically just a mixing, mastering guy.
It's interesting that you bring up Lords of Black, because when I listen to them, I hear a lot of modern power metal influences, but I also hear a lot of stuff from the 70s as well, you know, mixed in there. And I know that you were influenced by those same kinds of bands. And, you know, did that help you really with mixing this band and mixing their albums because of that kind of sound that these guys have?
Yeah, I think it's a natural kind of process when you grew up in the 60s, 70s. You know, I was a kid in the 60s, but I was listening to radio a lot, like Rolling Stones, Beatles, and all the great stuff at that time. The rock stuff came a little bit later for me, you know, like 70s. But when you see or hear the bonus tracks from Lords of Black, they always like to cover, you know, one of their idols, like Queen or Rainbow, other stuff I forgot already. But always when I mix these kind of bonus tracks, I keep it like more or less not the same sound like on as a main album, like more like the vibe of the 70s or something, like more open drums, more not so polished kind of sound. I like this kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was interesting is that they did a cover of Only by Anthrax, which was funny because you don't hear a power metal band doing that specific song. I would have expected they would have done one of the older tracks with the way that the band sounds, but they did a cover of that, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It's funny because when I mix, I said, why are they covering Anthrax? I thought the same. You know, the other song, I guess, I'm not sure if it was that album, but we made once Innuendo from Queen. I said, and the other song is Anthrax. What the hell? I didn't even know the song. Of course, I was touring with them in Halloween and Anthrax, I think, 88. And I like this band. I love them, you know. I would love to work with them as a mixing guy or something. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised that Lords of Black is, you know, covering this kind of style.
You know, producing these albums, does this push back the schedule of Masterplan quite a bit since you were so busy, you know, mixing and producing records for people?
It's definitely a little like a one-man show here, you know. It's like surviving. I'm honest, you know. The studio keeps me surviving, and I'm happy to work with music and for musicians. And, you know, I'm also, it sounds a bit pathetic now, but I'm also in the age I'm thinking about, you know, do I really want to be on stage still in that age, you know, so much? And of course, my wife is always pushing me, get out. You get lazy when you're not getting out. And but my day job is like checking the mails in the morning, and we're getting offers from festivals, basically, or some smaller touring in Spain or something. So I have to deal with this all. We don't have any agency and no manager, nothing. So I think that's the future of a musician. You're not only guitar. By the way, I'm not playing guitar anymore. I don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I didn't rehearse for 5 or 10 years. You know, it sounds horrible, but it's what it is, you know. That's why we need to play live, and then you get back and you still play, and people still hear. I can play my stuff, but mm-hmm. It's like this dealing with arranging flights for the festivals, for the gigs, hotels, and dealing with the promoters and all the stuff, you know. And then on the other side, I have the mixing or producing job and. And even if I have free time, I'm still trying to learn stuff or checking in the internet what is new on the market, you know.
Well, it's interesting because every musician I talk to that gets older, they say, well, I don't want to tour that much anymore. But then when they get on stage, they talk about how much they miss being on stage and playing in front of people.
I think it's basically only for me possible when I have a band like this now, because this band is so easy to work with, this lineup, you know. And I think I'm too old to fight with band members anymore and to think, oh, come on, I don't want to be next to this guy. You feel bad or something, you know, you want to go home, you want to go to your hotel room or something. But when Masterplan is now touring, on, we have the next show already in Madrid in 3-4 weeks. And so I'm looking forward. So we always have big parties. We're meeting, we play good, and everything is easy. And so far we have, I don't know, 6-7 shows booked already for this, next 6 months.
Now, has Masterplan, have you guys narrowed down any songs, have any songwriting at least done, and maybe talk about that process?
We started some years ago already. I think I said it already. But I don't like this kind of material so much anymore. But we have already 6 songs, which are really good in a way. But for me, it's not enough for finishing an album. I don't want to have 4 fillers or 5,
mm-hmm.
you know, and bonus tracks and this and that, or cover songs. And so I want to make a strong album, you know, something to be proud of. I don't know. People always complain anyway nowadays with what you're doing, and or comparing it with the stuff you did 20 years ago and being disappointed why it's not the same, you know.
Right.
Not leaving you as an artist. They just want you like a copy machine. I just read an interview from Tobias Sammet about Avantasia. You know, it's like even he is so successful, but he's frustrated that he has to copy himself, and people expect him this kind of style. That's it, you know.
Right.
And for me, it's something like music is, you know, that something comes from inside, and you have a different kind of, you know, stuff which is moving you, you know, from listening or influencing you from producing or whatever. And but still, you have your style. I think it's not getting too far left and right anyway. But mm-hmm. So let's see. I it's hard to talk about music. You know, it's just
right.
Try my best, and we see what's coming out. I hope in September or October, something like that.
Well, it's like the way the record industry goes. If you tell them you have an album, let's say if it's done by September, it could be like a year from now with the rate that they go and release an album.
Yeah. We spoke about it already, but it's like they contacted me a week ago and they asked me when I can deliver the master. I said, what the hell? I'm not talking about the master when I didn't even finish the songwriting. No. But they said, yeah, but we need 6 months after the delivering of the master. That sounds maybe for average people not so bad, but 10, 20 years ago, they needed just 3 months, and they made a big promotion tour. Nowadays, they need 6 months and not doing much. Mm-hmm. That's why I was a bit shocked, you know, but I think that's what it is nowadays. You know?
Now, when you haven't played guitar for a long time, when you go back and start playing and practicing, is it something that comes back to you right away, or is it something you got to do for a little bit to get used to it again?
Nah, it's basically, of course, you know, you need 1 or 2 days to your fingers hurting in the beginning because of the soft skin. But basically, it's like bicycle riding. It's you didn't forget anything. When you grab it like now, I didn't play for 2, 3 weeks or 4, I don't know. Then I need 1 or 2 days. That's it. But, of course, you're not getting better. You're not learning from not doing anything, you know? But it's not the time like I did in the old times, you know, when I had 5 or 8 hours per day. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not happening anymore.
So let's talk about some of the stuff you've had coming out and maybe talk about some of the albums you've mixed that have come out or that will be coming out and some of the projects you've been doing lately.
Yeah, so it's like... you know, quite interesting. I'm still trying to get on a higher level somehow. You know, I have a big dream, like getting, you know, with really more famous bands. Let's say, like, you know, my friend Andy Sneap is so busy now, he can't even mix all the albums anymore. You know, he's with Judas Priest on tour. And I just hope to get in contact with some of these bands he's doing. But, of course, I don't want to steal some bands from him. But I see that... I guess, I'm not sure if it's right, but I think Saxon is already doing something with a different mixing or producer guy, mm-hmm. because he's too busy. Or maybe they're just preparing it alone without him for the mixing or something next year.
Right.
But also my friends from Exodus I contacted, you know, but they didn't answer me. I don't know why, but I sent a message. Some other people as well, like, you know, let's say... to Rainbow, something like this. I would love to mix something, you know. Or John Sykes, I tried as well. He's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
I heard the new material and I thought, man, this could sound a bit more powerful, you know. But I love that he's back somehow and coming maybe hopefully soon on tour.
Right.
But you see, that's the kind of thing I want to try to get on a level, you know.
Now, you've been mixing a lot of heavy metal bands, obviously, but have you thought about maybe doing another genre of music or maybe something like an AOR band or something down the road?
Yes. The band Avalanche from Spain has a lot of AOR influences. Mm-hmm. And normally I'm not doing so many effects on the vocals and the keyboards. And everything I deliver is very dry, like I always like modern dry and direct in the face kind of thing. But they didn't like it, and then I realized, okay, they want the old school, like 80s. So I put tons of reverb on the keyboard and delays on the vocals and extra delays, which I never do. But they loved it so much. So this is definitely not my style, but I was rethinking. Maybe some bands like it totally different, you know. No, but I would love to, yeah, why not? I mean... I'm coming from the 70s. I was listening to AOR music a lot at that time. Mm-hmm. Not so much nowadays, but I grew up with Toto. I love Toto, so, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when you were out of Halloween and, you know, obviously starting Master Plan, did you think or realize or have an interest in doing this producer role type thing that you're doing now, back, say back, like, you know, God, it has to be like 18, 19 years that you've been out of the band now. Did you envision yourself doing this, what you're doing now, mixing and mastering and producing records?
There was a key moment. I think it was after the Saxon tour we did with Masterplan. I think it was 2007, something like that. So I was thinking about the next album. I think we did. The tour was about MK2. So we thought about the next album, and I was asking for some advances from AFM Records. And then the guy from AFM Records, the boss, more or less, don't want to mention any name. He said, "Man, you have a studio, man. We can't give you always money and this, you know. Why are you not producing some bands?" I said, "What the hell? This is Masterplan studio. It's not for anybody. It's my private studio. I didn't want to have anyone here." And then, you know, he told me this, and in the same week, I guess, one band from Czech Republic was contacting me. And another band from Italy contacted me three months later. So I just started with that. So the first band was X-Core from Czech Republic, and everybody heard this mix and was so fascinated, like, wow. You know, I got one band, you know, after the other one, you know, opening the door here in the studio was amazing. Mm-hmm. So for them, it was like, wow, Roland Grappa from, you know, Masterplan living in Slovakia. So all the bands came now from Czech Republic and Slovakia here, and also from Austria. And then later, the second band was from Italy, The Adelus. We did two albums together, but this is already a long time, you know.
Right. Like
more than 10 years. And since then, I think, I don't want to count the bands, how many I did.
Right.
But I have also Black Majesty from Australia. I have many Spanish bands. And from England, I had IMI, also, you know, this many, many bands. So also some German, very unknown bands I did finally last year. But so slowly getting international.
Well, when you talk about producing these albums too, with your solo albums, for example, you did that stuff yourself in your studio in Germany. And did you take any of that with you in producing these new records, or did you just learn an entirely new process and go that route, you know, starting in 2007 when you really started doing this stuff?
I think you're right. I mixed my first solo album, and it was an experience. I was a bit maybe too naive or something at that time, and maybe too self-secure to think I can do it. The recording process was okay. You know, I think the guitar sound was good in a way. I got just a message like a week ago from a guy who lost his guitar sound so much. And but on the other side, the mixing, I didn't know what I was just leveling. You know, I can't even open the old sessions anymore because it was like on Windows and old Session 8 before Pro Tools came out or something. Mm-hmm. And I used ADAT system. It was really horrible. You know, 3-5 times a day I had a crash down from the computer or something. It was horrible. And but I mixed it and I thought I can do it and it sounded okay. But for the mastering, I went to a mastering studio in Hamburg.
Right.
And that was my first experience, like for myself, to mix something. And it was okay, but not really brilliant.
You know, when you listen to the first solo album that you did, it's more along the lines of that Guitar Hero, Yngwie Malmsteen-ish type style, where, you know, later on, once you hit the Dark Ride, and then obviously when you left Halloween, when you're out of Halloween, you went to a much more modernized version of what you were doing. And I think that, you know, your style has changed since then, you know, obviously, you know, over the last, say, like 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I think it's... was getting back or finding myself again because I was copying Yngwie too much or this kind of neoclassical style. Mm-hmm. I think when all these Guitar Heroes came out in the beginning of the 80s, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? This kind of, was it Roadrunner Records?
Shrapnel.
This kind of, Shrapnel, yeah, that one. Oh, man, they released so many famous guitar players. And so I just went on this wave when I joined Halloween. I thought, okay, I, you know, nobody knows me, maybe I should show something. And then I was falling in love with this Yngwie style. But before I was really into Ritchie Blackmore as well, because I like the Stratocaster sound. But my biggest influences are like Ole John Ross and Michael Schenker, Sykes, and even Zakk Wylde, you know. And you see Hendrix, a lot of people, Mark Farner. And somehow I wanted to show something, and I fell in love with this kind of style. But then, you know, when I felt my own band doesn't like it, Halloween, I mean, then they told me before we did the Dark Ride, don't play this anymore. Roy Z was talking to me. So I said, what? They don't like my style, but I'm playing in this band already, let's say 12 years or something. And I stopped it. And now most of the messages I get from guitar players, they love my old style more than now, you know, this kind of Stratocaster and. But basically, I felt back to my own, you know, kind of style when I was a younger guitar player on Rampage before Halloween. So I was very melodic playing. I played mostly like Gibson Explorer guitars or Les Pauls, also Stratocaster in the beginning, but I never got a good sound because why I started with a Stratocaster, which was heavy modified, you know, was basically just Eddie Van Halen, to be honest, right, which is also one of my heroes. So you see, you try to find your phases in your life as a guitar player, your style, and basically I found my style. I was very melodic, German influenced, by the way. I think it's a unique style we have. I can play now to record and people hear immediately it's my style. That's what I wanted. And not like copying somebody else anymore. And I lost this in Master Plan since then. You know, it's like being myself is much better feeling.
You know, I think one of the things too about your style playing is that, you know, in Master Plan and when you did a lot of your stuff after Halloween, I think that you went away from that shredding style guitar playing, which, you know, isn't as memorable as, say, you know, having more of a sense of melody in your playing, which is what you have now. You know, like when I think of like a Michael Schenker, for example, you know, he has a very melodic style of playing. He doesn't do all that crazy shredding. And I think you have kind of basically adopted that kind of style.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean when I mentioned before the German style. It sounds a bit arrogant, but I think these two guys from Scorpions, they invented a really big kind of unique style of melodies, you know. I mean, Ole John Ross is more Hendrix influenced, a bit different, but Michael Schenker, his melodies you always can sing, and that's how I play guitar when I arrange a song. I try to make background or overdub guitars, like, let's call it like Brian May. So I make a lot of arrangements like overdubs like Brian May in the background, which not everybody can hear very clear, but it adds something to the sound. And but then there are some certain melodies in the song which I love to make easy statements, like melody which you can remember,
right,
or it's a part, extra part in the song. And then there's my little ego saying, okay, let's shred something, you know.
Right.
Of course, it should be here and there, but not too much, because there's nothing to show anymore. I think there are so many good guitar players out there with a lot of great finger techniques or, you know, whatever, like acrobats on the neck, but I'm not impressed about that anymore. You know,
right.
It's like, for me, the best guitar players are, you know, I just showed my wife some days ago when I was a bit drunk, listen to these guys, man, these are so great, like John Sykes, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, they play so very accurate and very fluent and very virtuose, but in a way, not overdoing it, you know, and with a good sound. I was always a good sound guy. So Michael Schenker, Ole John Ross, they had a great sound. Brian May. I mean, if somebody's hearing the guitar of John Sykes, you know who it is. You know?
Right.
That's what I mean. Everybody has a unique style, and that's for me the most important part, melody and guitar sound.
You know, it's interesting. With all these guys you just mentioned, they had the ability. Not only did they have the playing ability, but they had the ability to know what parts fit with what kinds of songs, and they didn't have to overdo it on parts, and some parts they had to go balls out on, and they had a knack of really knowing what parts should go where.
That's what I mean. So when I was a young guy, I heard the first band, maybe it was the second, Tigers of Panting, and I heard this band. I didn't know John Sykes at that time. I, you know, the, at that time there was not no magazines, there was no internet, nothing. I just somebody gave me this record and I said, wow, I like it. So I checked out the other one. I think they had two or three with him, I'm not sure. But this solo style was really catching me and I said, oh my God. And then later Thin Lizzy, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Halloween was covering even one song of him, and I was blown away about this kind of style. And then I saw him with Blue Murder in Japan live, and I was getting more and more into his style because I liked his kind of, you know, playing alone on stage with such a massive guitar sound. And,
right.
They're still interesting. It was never like a feeling there's something missing.
Right.
So I'm going to have a little bit of a production question for you now, Roland. As we talk about production, we talk about, you know, producing and mixing records. You know, back in the day, you know, you had your rack-mounted analog gear, and as time has gone on, a lot of these plugins that they've come out with have sounded much better than they have in the past. And so my question for you is this. You know, a lot of people have moved away from rack-mounted gear, but then I've seen people, you know, using these plugins, and the sound has been getting better. And some people swear by the old school analog gear that these plugins emulate. And what are you using these days? Are you using a lot of these electronic plugins, or are you using a lot of more rack mount gear like some other producers do?
I have both. So I'm totally keeping up. I'm on the newest system, and my Pro Tools system. I just made upgrades last year. Problem is, you needed to buy all the plugins again because the upgrades, and they're not easy or not able to crack anymore. I just bought a UAD card. This is also one thing, you know, the sound of these plugins are amazing. UAD and Andy Sneap gave me this kind of advice. And you see, I'm following it. You know, I'm still checking some newer plugins or compressors or something, but mm-hmm. I still like to make guitar sound like the old school way with amplifier and
right.
cabinet and microphones. But some of the bands doesn't have budgets, and I'm getting lazy. I'm using my Kemper, you know, and which has great sounds as well, of course. Sometimes I'm not getting the sound even with a Kemper or amplifier and cabinet and whatever, which you find out on the mixing, and then you think, oh, something is missing, and then I'm adding it, just plug-in or other tricks. I have so many tricks, you know, and just blending it together and to make some extra aggression or something.
Right.
Something mid-rangey, like you add on the last second, like a Marshall kind of emulation, which Marshall is always great for the mid-range, you know. So do you see, I'm using all the tricks which are available, but I don't think that you're reinventing the wheel anymore at the moment. You know, a guitar is a guitar sound, and the emulation is not better than the original. You know,
no.
It's just, it's more comfortable and easier to use. The Kemper is great, but the Kemper is just fed by the signal you give him, you know. If you have a bad guitar sound and you put it in the Kemper, it's not getting better.
Right.
You know, it's interesting because I've always been, even with digital plugins and effects, it's always been the rule of thumb in production to have a very, very good preamp. And now you're even seeing some of these preamp plugins sounding much better, you know, as time goes on.
That's for sure. That's the best part of it. I think this kind of emulation of like tape machines or the old, let's say, digital machines from the 80s or 70s, which were pretty bad in a way, but they had the charming sound somehow. And they're getting better, these kind of plugins. And that's really, really beautiful, because when you buy this stuff, you still can buy it used somehow, but then it's like 30 years old and you get some old machine for 2,000 euro paying, and you never know when it breaks, you know. It's like, and of course, as a plugin, you can have 10 of them on different kind of channels, mm-hmm. you know, if you need it. But this is definitely something which is much better than 10, 20 years ago when I started with all this
right.
Pro Tools system or whatever, you know.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you, but I lost my, you know, Neve preamp, you know, that, you know, due to a lightning strike. And, you know, it's funny, I got the emulator that I've been using, and I have a really, really good interface. And I'll tell you what, it sounds really, really good, almost as good as the original. You know, some people even tell me that it sounds better.
Yeah. I think nowadays it's not so easy to say this is better or this is better. It's just a little bit taste or something.
Right.
I have very old Neve preamps and EQs from the I don't know, 80s. And I paid a fortune when I bought it like 20 years ago. And I have Focusrite and. So all these different companies, some of the same developers involved in it, like Robert Neve. And but they're still sounding different, you know. I have, of course, SSL as well. I bought just old SSL strip, two preamps and EQ from Andy Sneap. So I was a bit shocked that he sold his old ones, which he used for all the productions. So, and I said, why is he selling it? There must be a reason. Maybe some better plugins. You know, see, you can be get crazy about equipment, and you have to be careful about it. You know, if you follow the trend, everything new which comes out of the market you're buying, I think some of the plugins are like my favorites are maybe 20% of all the plugins I'm using, and the rest is just I bought it and I never used it anymore.
Right.
You know.
Well, Roland, for my last question, any last words to say to the fans that will be checking out this interview?
Yeah, man, I'm happy that I could do an interview. This time it was more about studio and equipment and producing, mixing. I hope I was not boring you, is it right? You say it?
Right.
Getting you too much bored. And yeah, but it's my passion. I love this kind of stuff. Since 12 years I'm doing this now, and I'm still hungry about it. You know, it's like something keeps me here going, you know. So hopefully we come back with a Master Plan album soon, and also going on the road somehow, more festivals, because we need some new product to get out, that we get more booked, you know.